Night Hops podcast is intended for you, but not your children. My dad and Matt say bad words in this episode, which isn't good for kids like me to hear. Listener discretion is advised.
I am rolling.
I am rolling, and I've pressed record. Seriously, though, how is Madonna gonna make a song about meeting Molly when she's mom age, you know? Like, I don't think about Madonna having fun. Okay, hold on, I'm just pulling up the rundown, because I bet it has. There it is. Well, you didn't put the episode number up there at the top for me.
It is episode 140.
All right, it's time for me to make a statement that this is episode 140, the curse of the return of the cult of Michael Myers ends and or kills. 3, 2, 1. So, Trevor.
Matt.
Did we figure out when evil dies?
I think evil dies tonight. No. Evil dies October 31st. 2018. No, I don't think evil's dead. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Nighthawks podcast, the cinema-centric podcast for those of you who like to stay up late and watch spooky movies for the October season. This is kind of our stripped-down Monstoberfest, but it's bigger than the Monstoberfest last year, so at least give it that. But we are a couple of cinephiles, or I guess at least professional critics on some level. And we are watching spooky movies for the spooky Halloween season. We are calling this one Monstoberfest Ends. Because tonight we are discussing Halloween Ends. We could consider this a sequel episode to our Monstoberfest episode from 2017, episode 51, where we covered Halloween 1978 and also covered Friday the 13th.
I thought we were just doing it because we were ordering burnt ends. For the record, our specific thing, you make little toasty crunchy cubes out of pork belly, you make them out of turkey breast, you make them out of chuck roast. Them ain't burnt ends. Stop calling that burnt ends. That's just little steak bites. It's just little pork belly bites. That ain't from the end of nothing. Rant over. Mic dropped.
Well, I did want to mention last year's Monstoberfest, Matt, although it was truncated because I ended up having a child.
For those keeping score at home, he does mean his own. He hasn't like been out there doing a black phone.
Or have I? But we did record an episode last year that was just kind of lost to technology. We had a computer crash. But we actually sat down and did a full episode on Halloween Kills with our Black Pope of genre film, Mr. Mark Ball. We would have loved to have had Mark on this year to talk about Halloween Ends, see how everything ended up for him. But Mark is getting married this month. So congratulations to Mark. We're not going to bug you for an episode this year. And you are off the hook forever having to talk about Halloween Kills again, which he was not a fan of.
I just can't believe someone would stage an entire fake wedding just to avoid us.
It's not likely, but it is possible, I guess. But without further ado, we are talking about Halloween Ends. This is the newest movie from the Halloween franchise, came out this year, 2022. Halloween Ends has a limited theatrical run. It is also streaming on Peacock. If you have that subscription service as part of your Halloween viewing this year, it's a good one to have. I know I stump for Shudder very often, which is the horror streaming service that comes at a pretty good price point and has some really fantastic programming. But you know what, Matt? Flipping through Peacock and their horror selection, their Halloween selection this year, Some really good stuff. Like, if you want to watch the old Universal horror movies, the old Universal monsters, they're all there. You want to watch the Wolfman remake from 2010? They got that.
The question mark was emphasized.
You want to watch some Alfred Hitchcock? They have all of that. So I have actually been enjoying Peacock this year. Matt, you watched this on Peacock as well, or did you sneak out to the theaters for this one?
I actually openly, I went under cover of night and went and saw it in the theater.
Oh my. So your experience might be a little different from mine. We are talking about Halloween Ends. I guess we should do a synopsis here. Evil was to have died the night of Halloween 2018, according to the events of 2018's Halloween and the 5 minutes later sequel Halloween Kills from 2021. Both of them avowed follow-ups to Halloween 1978, ignoring all of the sequels and remakes. Instead of dying that night, however, Evil has allegedly gone underground and semi-dormant in Haddonfield, Illinois, 4 years after the previous films. We find our franchise protagonist Laurie Strode, played by Jamie Lee Curtis, trying to live a normal, healthy life and put her experiences down in a book. She lives with her granddaughter Allison from the previous two movies. Both are struggling as survivors of a high-profile traumatic event. Meanwhile, there's a young man in Haddonfield coping with his own totally unrelated Halloween trauma that saw him unfairly blamed for the tragic death of a child. Corey is a town pariah, working for his family, getting hassled by local teens, and he finds himself trading some flirtations with Allison. As the pressures of living in a small town and the cruelties that can come with it begin to mount on our young lovers, temptation starts to bubble up to burn down the town. Conveniently, Corey makes a terrifying discovery that might help him do just that. Legendary killer Michael Myers is still alive and in Haddonfield. He just needs some help to get started again.
It's been 4 years since Michael Myers vanished without a trace.
Hello?
I saw him watching me.
You pretend like you moved on, but you're actually just obsessed with death.
What are you gonna do when Michael comes back for you? Because he is coming.
But this time, something feels different. He's more dangerous. Killed my daughter, but tonight I will kill him. Come and get me.
Lori!
Maybe the only way he can die is if I die too. It all ends now.
Closing out our newest sequel trilogy in the already rebooted, remade franchise, we are told that this is where Halloween ends. So, Matt, I want to do just kind of a quick review of this sequel trilogy up to date before we really take a spoiler-free bite.
I believe them, Trevor. This is the last one. They're never making another Halloween movie.
Never ever it's making a Halloween real. Movie ever again. These are binding contracts that the studios make with the audience, and we can sue after this, I think. But Matt, I do want to kind of just talk about the trilogy up to this point, this sequel trilogy by David Gordon Green and Danny McBride. Were kind of the impetus behind this one. Halloween 2018, this was 40 years after the original Halloween film. Michael Myers escapes from a mental institution and revisits a Halloween night of terror on Haddonfield. Laurie herself has been waiting as a survivor, has traps in her house for the big guy, anticipating his return.
They're all spooky. Oh my God! Michael Myers, spent the last 40 years in captivity.
I have prayed that he would escape so I can kill him. He's waited for this night.
He's here.
He's waited for me.
This was probably my favorite of this trilogy and the most cohesive sequel. It's brutally violent. It offered the most suspense for me. I really liked this one. Matt, how about 2018's Halloween? How did you like that?
I liked it. I have the complaint with this entire concept of I really don't like them just ignoring all the middle movies. I know the middle movies are a mess and they had to pick and choose some of them at a minimum, you know, to disregard. But I hate the mythology that Michael Myers just stood there in an asylum for 40 years, you know?
Sure.
And I mean, yeah, he would add old man strength to his potent blend of madness and possible implied Satan necromancy or whatever that he sometimes has and sometimes doesn't. But I just didn't, I hate the idea that like this dude's like, I mean, what are we looking at here? What did we figure out? Like 58 minimum, right?
Sure.
I don't know. I was a little skeptical, but then ultimately I did really like most of what happens here. I like survivalist Jamie Lee Curtis with the booby-trapped house and the plan of action. I like the skeptic's voice in this one was the granddaughter and the daughter who were kind of like, well, mom's a little, you know, she's still kind of stuck on that Michael Myers thing. And I thought it all worked. I'm still marinating on which one's my favorite, but for now, I think I'm going to agree with you that it was the first of the three. Is this the Danny McBride?
The Danny McBride. Eastbound and Down Danny McBride.
The Righteous Gemstone himself?
That's the one. Well, in 2021, we got the sequel to the Halloween sequel with Halloween Kills. In this one, after we have some 1978 Halloween flashback retcon that establishes a new character, we continue Michael's Night of Terror as he rampages and the violence grows. Laurie is hospitalized and the town survivors from the 78 incident get an unruly mob together to hunt Michael down. But as unruly mobs go, they may not have all the right information to go on. There's more tragedy, more death, more murder. Michael Myers is killed in a hail of gunfire, only to get back up and disappear.
We are the survivors of Michael Myers.
Lori, what do?
We fight. He is a killer, but he will be killed tonight. Michael!
This one probably left me the coldest out of the three, but I cannot take away that when this movie gets up to highway speed, which is pretty darn quick, the violence and the slasher kills in this are dialed up to a degree that it's pretty top tier for modern slashers. I have to give it that. The performances, though, are pretty cheesy, and the writing is just was not my favorite. So this one probably left me the coldest out of all of them, Matt.
So I think this is the Rocky Balboa of the Halloween movies, in that I really liked what they were trying to do, and I really liked all the callbacks in it, and I really liked the idea of, like, let's revisit these original cast members, get them back where we can, and go over the theme and the core idea of let's see how being the site of this massacre and being the place where these things were done and being the people that, you know, shot at him and missed, or being the kid who was babysat and the kid who babysitted, and how your coulda, shoulda, would've's on all that affect you. That was a cool idea. And I'll give him credit for his swing, and I'll also give him credit for really, really fun kills, if that's your thing. But I do think this series, this sequel series, is interesting and meta, and they have some very good ideas. I think that what killed this one for me is, like you said, their actual screenwriting. Like, I mean, someone must say, like, we kill Michael tonight, or how evil dies tonight, or this is the night that it ends. This is the night, like, we turn the table. Like they just beat you like a dead horse with that stuff. Some of it was just a little too corny. But I love Halloween, the OG Halloween. I really like the idea and the outline and the pitch here. But the actual writing and the plausibility, it feels maybe like someone should have took another pass at this.
Well, and the performances are kind of off. Like, I know we brought back some actors here, some actors that were in the original 78 film, brought them back for a little fan service, and their performances weren't the strongest. But I know Anthony Michael Hall has some better reads in him than what were used in the film. And so that struck me as a little weird. But then that brings us to, in 2022, Halloween Ends. I can actually say that...
Halloween Kills. You were correct about the year that it is set in. You said the year it takes place in.
And as a standalone movie watching experience, I liked it. I wasn't enormously in love with Halloween Ends. I missed some of our standard slasher tropes. But I was really ultimately won over by the movie's desire to do something different. And with that said, well, against expectations for a new Halloween, none of this was new. It was new for Halloween, but I've seen this all in other movies before. As much as I did salute them for trying to do something new, it wasn't necessarily something new for me. It was just something new for the franchise. And so this is the one that I consider fairly mid, but the pushback on it has been so almost venomous and violent that I kind of feel the need to get in and scrum up.
I didn't mind it. I'm definitely not in the hater column. I think most of what I just said about Kills applies to Ends because it has the same weakness, which is the script. And I feel this is a thing in Hollywood now, is like we just neglect script. Anybody can do some fucking dab wax and come up with ideas. You know, the big, what if Michael Myers was this? What if we made a huge Michael Myers? What if we called every version of Michael Myers from the multiverse and made a Michael Myers golem, and he would then count as a kaiju? You know, like anybody can sit around doing that. But somebody still has to deliver the lines and the performances plausibly. And some of the stuff here felt like this script was residue. Like the leads should have been almost 10 years younger. Like they should have been in high school or just out of it. But for the town to really hate them, they had to be losers with the past. So they couldn't be that young. And then there's a lot of stuff in here that I really liked. I liked the idea that like the town's not all that hot on Laurie Strode. Some of them don't like her. Like a woman berates Laurie and says, "You did this to," and she's standing there with someone who was injured by Michael, you know. She's like, "You did this to my," I think it's her mother or sister, but she says, "You did this. You baited a madman for no reason."
Which is true, and which was not a perspective I had considered after that first movie.
I like the little bits we have of the Laurie Hawkins, the Jamie Lee Curtis, Will Patton kind of romance, but I don't think it really needed more time. What they did was cute. But it's not a serious, it doesn't quite even rise to the level of a whole subplot, right? I liked the main arc. I have some questions about, I don't know, I guess in Toto, I liked it a little better than Kills, but not as good as Halloween, parenthesis 2018.
Well, and I also have this phenomenon where if I take the trilogy as a whole, now that it's complete, I can kind of see a top-down thesis here that I appreciate. Based on this, I think I'm a kind of a Green McBride trilogy defender.
Well, there's a lot of good design and foreshadowing and theme in this. There's a lot of good, like, Chekhovian setup and payoff, and there's a lot of theme and repetition and rule of threes and stuff. And the production's really looks good. The old creepy houses look cool. They've sort of reimagined Haddonfield as a place of haves and have-nots, where like some people are doing very well and then other blocks are like boarded up Detroit style. And that all worked really well. The character actor playing Michael Myers remains impressive under his mask, you know? I don't think he's actually 64. I'll put it that way. This visual take on Myers is like really imposing and intimidating. And there's a lot to like here. And I'm sure like Danny McBride's busy. Like he wouldn't do this if he didn't. Like he's sitting around going, "Man, I'll tell you what, I would love to be involved in the Halloween franchise." You know, I think that's very sincere. The thing that killed this for me, that keeps me from recommending it, as the kids say, with my whole ass chest, is just, well, you said mid earlier, don't start with
that,
me.
That's true.
But the thing kind of slowing me down here is like, and I hate to keep harping on it, just the script. There's just some sort of weakness of execution, a weakness of flow, and a couple things that just don't quite make sense. Like, and I liked the male lead, Allison's kind of love interest. That guy turned in a pretty intense little performance for a third protagonist in a slasher sequel, right? He was taking his job pretty seriously. Allison was fine. Jamie Lee Curtis is always herself. I just keep thinking hot dog fingers when I look at her now, but So I don't know. Like, but looked at on the whole, the thesis that the small town modality and dwelling on the past and dwelling on dirty secrets is corrosive and corrupting, I really liked it. I think this will age well.
I agree.
And we'll look back on it and go, oh, these guys were actually trying to do something. That's okay. That's cool. I don't know what the fandom wants. Like, do they literally just want a movie where Michael Myers just murders people in a densely packed nightclub? Michael Myers causes a stampede? I don't know. That's the whole thing.
I don't know how often I'm going to revisit Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends. But I do kind of feel the need to scrum up and defend some of the new direction in the franchise. And like, folks, let's really put this out there. And this has honestly been my review of virtually every remake that's come out in recent memory. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Hellraiser, and now Halloween, where, yeah, it's not as good as the first one. And it's not even probably as good as the second one. But it is better than the lion's share of Halloween sequels out there. I think that's true for this whole sub-franchise, I guess. I think it's better than Halloween 2, the Rob Zombie version. I think it's probably better than Rob Zombie's Halloween. I think it's better than Halloween H2O or Halloween Revelations. What was that one? I can't even remember. I know some people will fight me on that. There are people who are really in love with their particular arm of this franchise, and this franchise splits a couple of different ways. But just from a filmmaking standpoint, I think these are probably the strongest, and they're the ones that had me nodding my head along the most. That's kind of my note, is, yeah, it's not as good as the original, and few things will be, but it's still better than most of the Halloween movies, and we've got to give it credit for that, whether you liked this direction or not. Now, I did, so I'm giving it a little more, but other than, like, just remaking the same movie over and over again, I'm with you, Matt. I don't know what these folks want.
Just like the end of the South Park where God turns out to be a platypus. And he's like, well, what were you expecting? And the kids are just like, well, not that. I think that's the whole thing going on here, is just Monday morning quarterbacking, you know. That means people that can't actually do the job criticizing how it's done.
Thank you. Is what I appreciate
Monday morning
that.
Quarterbacking means. I know how you are.
But I think we see that a lot in franchises that have passionate audience bases. Everybody's pissed at Star Wars because it's not the Star Wars movie I would have made. Everybody's pissed at Marvel because it's not the adaptation of that character that I would have made. And folks, it pains me. It breaks my heart to give you this bad news, but you're not making the movie. Nor are they making the movie specifically for you. They're making the movie for some people. But if you have a very specific vision and that's the only thing that you will accept, it's probably not for you. And that is a difficult pill to swallow. I get it. But it's time we start making that acceptance in our life.
Well, I would also go out on a limb and go so far as to say that, with rare exceptions, because we do have we count a few filmmakers as friends of the show. If you're listening to this and you need the reminder that you're not making the movie, please, you know, tack on a little addendum, which is, nor should you. You might have some good ideas about how maybe the next Marvel film could be a little less snarky. Or these are all kind of following one route, one outline that they reuse. I can almost tell 86 minutes in is the best time to go to the bathroom, you know. But they're still better at it than you. Or you'd be them.
Right.
You know. So take that.
It's Halloween. We're gonna have a good time tonight.
The boogeyman is coming. You're gonna get it. You're gonna get it. You're gonna get it. You're gonna get it.
Please help me.
It's time to put the boogeyman to bed.
What about the theater experience here, Matt? Was this a showing where you were the only guy in the audience, or did you have a crowd?
We did not. I took a friend of the show, Greg Orm, and some other friends of ours went with us. And I don't know, like the prime real estate in the dead center was sold. We went at 10:30 at night, and somebody brought a baby in a bassinet.
It was not me, by the way.
Just like, yeah, the baby at the R-rated horror movie. Yeah, he'll probably just sleep the whole time. What could go wrong?
How was the baby?
You know, he is actually okay. He slept the whole time. It was no big deal.
Okay. As a father who has snuck a child into an R-rated movie, that pleases me.
I wouldn't let everything going right this particular time put me off of a good bitch, you know? I mean, people laughed at the right times and gasped at the right times. It seemed like it was effective. I think it went well. And there are some pretty harrowing kills in this. And some people did walk out of it like, man, they fucked that one dude up, you know? So I think it worked.
Well, Matt, I do have kind of a grand unified field theory of this trilogy that we'll talk about after the spoiler curtain. But before we push that button, do you have any like franchise memories? What was your relationship with Halloween? How did you come to this one?
The first Halloween movie I ever watched was it the second Cult of Thorn one? Would that be like five
or six? I think. Did it have Paul Rudd in it?
I believe it had Paul Rudd in it.
That I think is six.
I think that was the first one I actually ever watched. And it was actually a while before I ever watched the first one.
I was pretty blessed. I came to the first one because I had a film teacher in high school who was a big John Carpenter fan. And of course, you're talking John Carpenter, you're going to end up talking Halloween at some point. And I think that was either, we didn't watch that one in class because it was R-rated and there are weird politic rules about that in school. But through him, I borrowed it from him or something. We ended up watching the original Halloween. And then that same year, I went to a Halloween party. And one of the activities at the party is that we watched Halloween 2, which I thought was pretty keen at the time. I'm like, wow, these are really solid. Of course, we all know Halloween 3 totally happens outside of the linear events of the franchise. It's got its own fan base now that David Gordon Green and Danny McBride, they've had their shot. There's a big push to see if we can get a sequel to Halloween 3 Season of the Witch, which I think, depending on who they give it to and how they do it, could be interesting. But after that, a really intense paying attention, trying to follow the continuity of 4, 5, and 6 happened with our friend Silent William. This is just a franchise of diminishing returns, I think.
Until we get to like H2O and the Busta Rhymes era of Halloween.
And like I said, some people really love that era. They eschew this for that. Yeah, ultimately, you know how we're coming down on this. If this is something that you have been following, you're going to watch it. If this is something you've been interested in, honestly, this isn't an awful one to jump in on. It seems needlessly baroque to do so. But this one, Halloween Ends, kind of stands on its own if you're hitting it for the first time. Now, that said, I don't recommend that.
You don't officially recommend coming in on the, what is it, 12th movie?
I do not, as a matter of fact, on record.
There is one other franchise where I recommend watching 1, 2, maybe 3, and then 11, and that's Hellraiser.
All right, Matt. Well, why don't you hit that spoiler button?
All right. The spoilers die tonight.
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 Somebody should take him out physically.
Spoilers die tonight.
It all goes back to Pump Up the Volume.
Nice timely Pump Up the Volume reference. I do those whenever I can.
Allison is not equipped for this relationship, and I will not let her get hurt. So stay away.
You started this! You brought me in! You invited me!
But you're the one to blame. If I can't have her, no one will. You want to help Allison, let her live her life. She has me now.
Well, Matt, here's my grand unified field theory, and this isn't particularly spoilerish, but in order to kind of defend it and explain it, I think it might be. But this is why I think after all three movies came out on a kind of meta top-down level, they all set a little bit better with me than they did. And it's because I saw this thing where Halloween 2018, that was the homage to the original. We're going to bring back some characters. We're going to do some callbacks. We're going to take Michael Myers. He's going to do some cool shit. We're going to take Laurie Strode. She's going to do some cool shit. And that's that movie. Then we have Halloween Kills, which is a sequel that seems to have taken all of the kind of cheesy concepts that come up in a lot of the Halloween sequels and rolled them all together and put them in one movie. So you've got throwback fan service, returning characters, retcon story, unkillable killer, etc., etc. Then Halloween Ends is our meta legacy movie. So we've got elements in here from Wes Craven's New Nightmare. We've got elements here of Friday the 13th, A New Beginning. We have elements in here of Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge, where they kind of did something different with these slashers, and that's what they're going for here. And now that I see top down that it feels like that's what they were going for, I haven't read anything on it. But I'm like, oh, I see what you guys are doing. You're trying to do something different with each one. You're trying to give a different Halloween experience to each audience. And I think, whatever kind of Halloween fan you are, there is going to be one movie in this trilogy that you're going to like at least. And on that level, I think this functions superbly.
Yeah, I think it's you've got it exactly. It's like a little bit of a combination of a clip show episode with a soft reboot with with some fan service with and some commentary of their own, which is like their idea of like, well, no, maybe the whole town does have something to do with this, and maybe all these people are a little bit, if not co-culpable, at least not somewhat responsible for not processing it and for turning inward. And so that's why I say I'm very conflicted about it, because there is a theme here, and there is intention here, and there is some very good production here. It's just, I guess you could just like loop me. And maybe we could make a techno song out of me saying it's the script. But we should get to it, because the big, the mega spoiler here, the true spoiler, the truly stop listening, even though it is a little bit telegraphed once you're actually watching, we see Michael Myers. I wouldn't say he's articulate or anything, or particularly merciful or particularly paternal, but we do see a bit of a Lake and Ing dynamic here. We have this young outsider, and he has a fork in the road where he can either have good ending with Allison or bad ending with revenge on the cruel townies. And he chooses to sort of take, in the words of George Michael, to put his tiny hand in Mike's and allow this toxic father figure into his life to replace his rather schlubby but nice actual stepfather.
I wasn't super clear on that.
And his mother is just horrible. She's like a real mommy dearest figure.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's his name? It's also...
His name is Corey. I can't remember his last name, but yeah, his name is Corey. And I remember that because the character who kind of fills his role in New Beginning, Friday the 13th New Beginning, is Corey Feldman. So I think that's a real conscious choice there.
And this is also, like, we saw this in, it's the installment they made, the Scream Queen documentary about that. There is a Nightmare on Elm Street that takes this tactic, too, of sort of trying to baptize a new killer and have a little bit of a misdirect, as well as one previous Halloween. But this is not, like, a full misdirect, because it's not a complete red herring, and it turns out it's just someone taking up the mantle of Michael Myers for whatever purpose. He does sort of get blessed by the actual Michael Myers, who he encounters. We're led to believe that Michael Myers has made himself a little squat in a sewer junction and has been, I guess, convalescing there for the time that takes place in between movies, which even for Michael Myers, I thought his environment was a little stark, because he doesn't even have like a bed or I don't mean like not a four-poster bed, although I do think Michael Myers would have a four-poster bed because he is a little princess. But he didn't even have like a bundle of rags in the corner or anything. They don't show anything about, not even a Rorschach can of cold beans or anything. And it actually, like, I am not sure if it was on purpose or not, but I was kind of thinking what they were setting up was that there just was no Michael Myers, that the kid was dreaming him up as he snapped. But then he does things and participates in murders and touches people. It seems like he's pretty real. And then ultimately they remove all doubt when the Scooby gang assembles and they kill him. And then they seriously desecrate his body to make it clear that the canonical Michael Myers has now been Fargoed.
Halloween Ends.
Yeah. Yeah, they want to make it real clear that this human being is dead. And if Michael Myers comes back, it's going to have to be in a sequel with some magic in it, or maybe a Silver Shamrock robot. Spoilers for Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Yes.
And the kid's effective, and his heel turn is effective. I didn't quite buy, like I alluded to earlier, I thought the couple dynamic between him and Allison didn't have enough room to breathe, and the script felt like it was under the assumption that they'd been... Like, they meet in the course of the movie, and in the weekend the movie takes place over, get to the point where they're initially willing to leave town together, and then literally almost willing to kill for each other, like Starkweather kind of way, you know? And I just didn't buy that. I mean, she's like 28, she has a job. She just feels like she snaps too fast, turns bad too fast, turns on her mom too fast. And I'm sure, like, what they're setting up is that, like,
It's Lori's grandmother.
But I'm sure they're setting up that, like, the grandmother probably, she was overpossessive and paranoid and weird for a lot of years. Because Lori's very zen in this. Like, she's made some steps and strides. And they're setting up that maybe that progress is fake. And you sort of see this, like, state where it's like, well, no, Michael Myers is really dead. It's in Corey's head. And there's going to be this moment where Lori thinks she's going to do a big reveal and find Michael alive again. But he's not there. It turns out it's Corey doing all the killing. But it doesn't actually fall down that way, which either great misdirect if deliberate or money on the table if not. But I feel like their relationship, which is kind of the linchpin of the movie, that's the other missing element. If she had gone all the way over the edge with him and become the Bonnie to his Clyde, that would have been cool.
It feels like they blinked at the last minute and said, I don't know how well this is going to test. Maybe we should keep her good, because she does have this. She's handling things well. She's, like you said, she's got a good job in healthcare. She's making money. She's living with Lori. They're living a very bucolic, peaceful life. And when he rolls into town, he kind of, I guess, dredges up some of the negative feelings, or they finally have a sounding board to get him out in the open. And she's ready to burn down the town as much as he does. He ends up doing it, but she blinks at the last moment and says, no, listen, you're meddling with things you don't understand. And is kind of the voice to say, no, you're using Michael Myers. This is wrong. And I get that, but it felt like an unfortunate arc for Allison. It seems like she's gone from secondary protagonist in the first two movies to really more of a plot device in this one. But it is more Corey's movie.
He waited for this night. He's waited for me.
For the last time, we fight.
And I'm the one that needs to kill it.
Happy Halloween, Michael.
You came here to kill me, so do it.
But something I do want to talk about, I think this is probably one of my favorite openings out of any of these movies. And that's filling you in on Corey's story, which happens, I think, the year following Michael Myers' big rampage. And it's this very visceral, horrific, and maybe that's just, it's giving me the kind of heebie-jeebies because I'm a parent now, but it involves the death of a tragic and brutal death of a child through an accident that makes him look guilty for murder. Not necessarily in a way that he's going to be prosecuted for. The police know what happened, but there is enough of a question mark above this thing that the town is going to jump to their own conclusions, which is that was one of the most authentic things in here, I think, is the way the small town will jump to its own conclusions, because it's the official story isn't as sexy, salacious, and interesting as the one I'm choosing to believe. And there's a lot of that there. But overall, for this being really Corey's movie, I think it was an interesting direction to explore with Halloween. We kind of got the impression, although it's never confirmed, that Michael Myers was going somewhat supernatural in the last one. It seems like as he kills, and this is another Freddy Kruegerism, but as he kills, he gains strength and gains power. And so after the first movie, he's got a few kills under his belt, and that's how he's recovering from this horrible burn and this fire. And by the end of this movie, after he's gone on this fantastically horrific rampage, he is almost unstoppable. He's taking bullets. He's getting back up after being shot. And then when we see him in this movie, when he's in his little sewer junction, he's old. He's doddering. He's kind of trembling as he reaches his hand out trying to get at people. And you get the impression that he's killing just enough to keep himself alive. Because there's some mention of some missing people. Nice cameo from the original Michael Myers as a homeless guy who says, "I see him take people in there sometimes." So you know he's maintaining, but he needs help. And that's where Corey comes in. He comes in and starts doing the killing for Michael Myers, giving rise to the boogeyman powers of, through consciousness, I grow strength. And by the end of the movie, he's not quite up to fighting fit, but he is willing to go a few rounds and shoot the fade with Laurie.
Well, yeah, and then they also do sort of reintroduce the idea that, like, he might be somewhat supernatural. And, like, I find ambiguity regarding that, like, really something that's, I mean, honestly kind of puzzling about the whole franchise, you know?
I wondered about that. I specifically thought about you.
Is he or isn't he? It's 10 movies in. Let's decide if this guy's a human being or not, or if he's a something or other.
Well, and I think ultimately that's why McBride and Green chose this particular tack for this franchise. If they were to take in, say, one of the conceits of Halloween 2, which is not part of this franchise, or this arm of the franchise, is that Laurie is the long-lost little sister of Michael Myers. I don't think they wanted to get bogged down in any of that and kind of wanted to tell their own story. We have our own version of Michael Myers. And what I like about it is that at least you can argue what happens in canon and things like that. I understand that. I hear that argument. I'm here for it. But thematically, this Michael Myers, I think, is the most consistent with the original John Carpenter film in that he is a boogeyman, and they say boogeyman so many times in this last one that it's almost the evil dies tonight of Halloween ends.
I'm your boogeyman, that's what I am. I'm here to do whatever I can. Be an early morning.
But they're really driving that point home, and that is consistent through all three movies, and I think that consistency is what kind of helps me like these as a cohesive trilogy. Because as story goes, they're a little scattershot. They don't necessarily have the same look. They have the same look, but they don't necessarily have the same feel from movie to movie. So that thematic chain is what kind of connects them for me and helps with that.
Geeks, nerds, devotees of all worlds, lend me your ears. A community of inclusion and passion awaits you at oneofus.net. Movie and music reviews, debates on books and beer, deep dives into comics and games. There's something for everyone because everyone loves something. Podcast posts daily with subscriptions. You get video content as well. All are welcome because in this world of fandom and fanaticism, all of us are in this together. Your love of pop culture and entertainment makes you one of us already. So join us today at oneofus.net.
Hey everybody, I'm Alan Barber.
And I'm Kirk Klinger.
And we are the hosts of a podcast called You've Never Heard This.
You've Never Heard This?
You've Never Heard This. It's been brought to our attention by the wonderful hosts of the Nighthawks podcast that we use the word new in our promo that they so graciously play on every episode.
And we are not new, Alan.
We are not new. We are no spring chickens.
We're not.
We've been doing this a while.
We've been around. Doesn't mean we know what we're doing.
No, not at all. But we certainly like to pretend.
We try.
If you love music, then yes, you'll love this podcast. It's like a book club, except you don't have to do the homework.
Absolutely.
And we hope that you will join us talking about everything from Soundgarden to Billie Eilish to the Dresden Dolls to Korn.
Little of everything, really.
Little bit of everything.
We have fun.
We do. We have a good time. So we hope that you will join us. Enjoy our podcast. We can be found on just about every platform you can think of. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, most recently, Amazon Music and Audible.
Nice.
You have no excuse to not find us.
Yes. So you've never heard us.
Every Tuesday.
So check out
the podcast.
You've never heard this.
Well, no conversation about Halloween is complete without discussing Laurie Strode and the actress who brings her to life, Jamie Lee Curtis. How did you feel about the transition of survivalist Home Alone Laurie Strode in Halloween 2018 to coffee-drinking grandma writing her book in Halloween Ends?
I'm going to be honest with you. I think I'm supposed to criticize it, but I actually kind of bought it.
I did too. I'm glad you went there.
Like, I did not have a huge problem with it.
She's ready to take care of business when it's time to take care of business. And I'm not just talking about, like, she hears Michael's out. Like, she sees Corey getting hassled on the street by a bunch of band kids, to show you exactly what degree of loser he is. She's ready to do something about it. She's ready to get up and fight and get her hands dirty and get dusty. And so I see the heart of that original, the 2018 Laurie Strode in there. And then the fake out that she does, you know, it would have been really easy that when Michael Myers goes into the house, it's a surprise situation where she's like, no, I was on the ball this whole time and it's another trap house. And she doesn't need all of that. She's like, no, just a little bit of deception here is going to make this work. And then she's got that, you know, one line where it's like, did you really think I was going to do that? It was so her. From that movie. So, yeah, it bridges nicely for me, but that's one of the criticisms I've been hearing.
To tell you the truth, I was expecting some kind of turn like that until the very end, when they finally just ultimately did not do it. I didn't expect her to be weak or anything, but I was very curious how they were going to handle that and to what degree she would have another murder house ready, etc., etc. And I don't mind the way they resolve that. I can live with everything that happened here. Like I said, I do not have big complaints here. I have lots of little ones, though, and it just felt like they could have polished it a little bit, got it a little less rough for us. Like I said, I ain't mad.
Do you think it's a fitting arc for Jamie Lee Curtis? This has kind of become her major body of work. Like, she's been in dozens of great movies. Let's run down the list here. You got the Freaky Friday remake that wasn't half bad. You've got Trading Places. You've got True Lies. You've got, you know, her entire body of slasher work, Prom Night, you know, the Halloween films. But Halloween is the one that seems to be kind of lionizing her in the public sphere. I think it was the day of the Halloween Ends release is the day she got her hands in the cement at the Chinese Theater. I don't know who owns that right now. It's not Grauman's anymore, but was this a fitting thing for her? I wish she well served.
I feel like she's really done with it.
Yeah, I don't think we'll see Jamie Lee Curtis coming back as Laurie Strode.
So I think it kind of has to be. And I do think that, like, sort of embracing possibility and embracing kind of reality and having Laurie get out with some life of her own left, I think that's a cool idea. Maybe this is something that just sounds cooler to me now that I would have hated in my misspent youth.
I think my maturity as a film goer now is definitely helping my opinion of this. I think if I was still in high school or if I was in college, I'd probably be one of the haters. But there is just this grander meta thing going on here that I can't hate. I can't bring myself to do it.
Man, there was a time when you were amongst the haters. I will attest.
Hey, I still submit that Mangler 2 is one of the worst films I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's Mangler 2, dude. You're not blowing anybody away with that piece of analysis, sir.
I can't remember any of the other movies I hated from back then. All right, Matt. Well, as Halloween ends, so ends Monstoberfest, and so ends this episode of Nighthawks Podcast. What are your final thoughts?
This probably isn't the real, like, at this point, it's kind of like, you know, like when they come out with a new Final Fantasy game, we know it's probably not the Final Fantasy, you know. I'm sure that they will drag Michael out of the grave kicking and screaming at some point here. Perhaps he will be hit with lightning that will realive him.
Now, that was a Jason
thing. That's
a
thing. I mean, it could happen to Michael Myers, too.
I'll tell you what, this might be fun. We've had a kind of a rash of sequels and remakes or retoolings. Let's just say out of the three, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which I think came out late last year or early this year, Hellraiser and Halloween Ends. Let's rank those. I'm going to say I've got to give the number one slot to Hellraiser. Probably number two goes to Halloween Ends and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. While I didn't hate it, I probably had the most problem with.
I'm ultimately going to put them in the same order, but I'm torn about it because I do think Halloween Ends did have great ideas. Like I said, it's just the exact script did not do them the best service the whole time. And there's a few little plot holes. I don't feel like the one core relationship was all that great. I did love the Vengeance on the Horrible Boss sequence. That was fun. And some of that stuff was all like a hoot, you know? Like there was a hoot to be had, a hoot to be hollered, as it were. Yeah, I'm going to go same order. I am. I did think that Hellraiser did have some flaws, and we didn't even get to all of them on our Hellraiser record.
Well, I think Hellraiser probably gets the advantage here because it's not trying to build on an already existing continuity, whereas Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Halloween Ends were. I have to dock Texas Chainsaw Massacre, however, serious points because there was clearly a discussion that was had somewhere along the lines where that movie was trying to be something in the vein of Halloween 2018. Because even though the original actress died right before they made it, they brought that original character back from the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre as kind of a no bullshit shotgun toting. I think she was a marshal or a deputy or something. And it had this real strong flavor of, wait, am I watching Halloween 2018? Wait, what's going on here? And I think they had that idea and then they abandoned that idea because that thread is not followed very far. And that's just kind of indicative of what was going on in that movie. It really felt like something that was made by committee. Halloween Ends feels like they had an idea and they were sticking to it. We can argue execution all day long, but I just think the overall thesis was stronger. But again, Hellraiser, again, is not trying to play on an existing mythology, so they got to do some new stuff, they got to do some evocative stuff of the old stuff, and I think just the ability to play in that and that freedom to play treated them a little better, so I've got to give that one the number one slot.
Yeah, even though, like, you shouldn't be able to Cenobite in a
That's a spoiler alert for Hellraiser, so bleeping that'll be fun. What is your I was gonna ask you this at the beginning of the show and I forgot. What's your favorite Halloween candy?
I don't know. That's gotta be a toss up between candy corn and circus peanuts.
I believed you for about half a second there.
I do actually like both of those and will eat them, but I think I like a full size Snickers. I like the occasional, like, exotic, like a Ghirardelli medallion.
Mm, yeah.
You know, but I really do think my heart belongs to Smarties and Pixie Sticks, the sour, pure sugar that you only eat on Halloween. Or sometimes, like, maybe your therapist has a dish of them out.
Interesting. You
know? I just like to open a little crinkle wrapple, and then you have all the little individual Smarties, and they taste the same, but they look slightly different. And you're like, oh, I think that was a light pink one. I think I tasted a light pink. And they don't. They're just pure sugar with a little citric acid. It all tastes like shit. But you're like, no, that was a blue one. It tasted blue. It did. I could tell.
You know, it's going to be boring because I think mine is a lot of people's, but it's often a toss-up. I really like a Reese's peanut butter cup in some fashion or form. Either the little mini ones they hand out or the single cup in a wrapper. But there is just something to be said about the crunch you get with a Kit Kat bar. And there is something about the little mini-sized twofer Halloween-sized Kit Kats that just you don't get with a full-size bar. And I miss that. And it's one of the things I look forward to every Halloween. That's a good holiday note to end out on. I liked that. Well, regardless of the season, regardless of when you're listening to this, you can find us on Spotify, you can find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and if you have the option to rate, write, review, we would appreciate that. It helps us get seen. And as always, tell your friends about us. If you enjoyed your time with us today, spread a little word, spread a little love. Recommending us to one of your friends is good as money in our pocket.
Sorry there. I slipped a cog there. I started thinking about candy and then like candy nostalgia. I started thinking about those Mr. Bones candies that are like a little skeleton you put together, but are otherwise a Smartie and or Sweet Tart, you know? And then I started to think about how I used to have a package of Zowers, you know, the Mike and Ikes that are sour. I'm a sour candy person. if you haven't picked that up in the last few seconds here. And I just really miss them because they were sour as Skittles, but they didn't have the awful sharp powder that actually hurts your tongue if you eat a whole. In our opinion, you should share this bag of them. And I haven't seen Zowers in the store for a while. And then I got to thinking, like, wow, there are no candies that I like in Candyland. And then I started thinking about Chutes and Ladders. And then I started thinking about, I have a balcony. And I was like, well, what if I put something really scary on my balcony? And then, like, the fire department came and they had to use their fire ladder, like the one in Chutes and Ladders. Anyway, apparently there's some people that just think about one thing.
What's that?
So I'm going to say, we're going to have to let you go because it's almost morning and my pills just wore off.
I used to pretend Smarties were pills. I had a buddy who liked to play, like, he was really into business and finance as a kid. And where we could kind of meet in the middle is we played Drug Lords. Having absolutely no frame of reference for what a drug lord is like or what, but we would set up little operations of Smarties. Smarties and... I think salt was used for cocaine.
Oh, that's what pixie sticks are for, man.
So goodbye, everybody, and remember, please, for the next day or so, the terrible lesson you learned tonight. That grinning, glowing, globular invader of your living room is an inhabitant of the pumpkin patch, and if your doorbell rings and nobody's there, that was no Martian, it's Halloween.